The Tom Woods Show, episode 672.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I want to talk about the LP again, Libertarian Party. I want to talk about Gary Johnson and Bill Weld a little bit. And I know everybody has an opinion on this subject, and mine is one among many. But if I don't talk about this, it's going to be eating away at me forever. So I'm going to link to some things at tomwoods.com/672. I'll link to an item that agrees with me, and I'll link to an item that disagrees with me. And I'm going to talk about both those items in the course of the episode today. So most of you know that Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, was chosen as the nominee for the Libertarian Party, as well as Bill Weld for the vice presidential slot. Bill Weld is a former governor of Massachusetts. He was governor when I lived in Massachusetts, and I briefly got to meet him, actually, when I was an undergraduate at Harvard, and he came for an event there, and I shook his hand and said hello, and it was perfectly pleasant, but I had no idea I'd be in this position right now. There's so much to say, but let me start off by explaining what I'm not saying. I'm not saying I need perfection. You can't have an intelligent conversation about this with somebody who's going to say, you're not going to vote for anybody who isn't perfect. I'm not asking for perfect. And then people will say, but aren't they better? Aren't Johnson and Weld better than Trump and Clinton? But I don't understand why we're playing that game. If you want to vote for Gary Johnson or go work for him, go ahead, knock yourself out. That doesn't matter to me. Knock yourself out. That's not the question I'm asking. The question that interests me is, should the Libertarian Party be nominating people like this? Not are they better than Trump or Clinton? For heaven's sake, I mean, almost anybody in the world is better than Trump or Clinton, right? I mean, surely our standards can be a teensy weensy bit higher than that. It's very, very demoralizing to me to see libertarians have such low standards that the best they can come up with is, well, they're better than these people. Well, no kidding. And it's, you know, as a Republican, there are parts of Gary Johnson that would be good. He would be pretty good as a Republican in some ways. Get rid of the leftism, and there would be some good things there. He would still be a lightweight. There's no question about that. I see no intellectual curiosity in the guy whatsoever. I don't see that he's more informed or better read now than he was 4 years ago. And you say, Woods, you intellectuals, we don't need you pointy heads. We need a man of action. But is it really too much to ask for the nominee to have a good grasp of the non-aggression principle? Could they at least understand the ideas on which the party is based? Am I really being that unreasonable? These are rhetorical questions, by the way. So I jotted down a few things that concern me. Again, this is not a question of, well, then you're saying I should vote for so-and-so. Instead, I'm not saying you should do anything. What I'm saying is the Libertarian Party ought to nominate somebody who is obviously a libertarian. I'll get to Bill Weld in a minute. What a fiasco that is. They brought him on to raise money. No other reason. They brought him on to raise money. This is a guy, well, let me jot down in case I, heaven forbid, I forget Bill Weld. Weld, put big letters, Weld. All right, we'll get to that. So let's talk about what I heard Johnson say in the presidential debate at the Libertarian Convention. All right, they asked him a bunch of sensitive, difficult questions. There's no getting around that. They were difficult questions to answer. So they asked him about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Well, the nice thing about the Libertarian debate was that every candidate was asked the same question. You get to hear and contrast their answers. That's how a debate should be run. So that was the question. Of course, that's a very, very challenging question because 99.9% of Americans support the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So he said yes, he would have signed it. And they asked him, well, would you have more time for your answer? Would you like to elaborate on that answer? And he said, nope. Now, to me, I just don't see why that's something to cheer. Why is this a guy we should be enthusiastic about? And then I'll get emails saying, well, I'm not enthusiastic, but he's still better than... No, but there are people who are enthusiastic about this guy. I was in the room. People were cheering. His answer was, no, I don't want to elaborate. Can you imagine Ron Paul being given the chance to explain one of his positions, saying, nope, My one-word answer is sufficient. And of course, yeah, I get that it's a hard issue. I get that, of course. It is a hard issue. As I said in the episode yesterday, Ann Coulter really nailed libertarians when she said they don't want to talk about the hard issues. They want to talk about pot. They want to talk about legalizing pot because they're not going to get in trouble for that. But when it comes to anti-discrimination law, they can't run away from it fast enough. All right, again, I get that it's a hard issue. But once you yield on it, that's when you get people having to bake the cake. Because once you start saying, well, look, I don't want to have to serve somebody who's making me do something that violates my beliefs, well, the answer becomes, well, you've been forced to serve people for years. So as soon as you accept what seems to be a benign principle that violates the non-aggression principle, you wind up going down this road. And of course, it makes libertarianism look like it's some kind of ad hoc thing. We favor liberty, except in those cases where Gary Johnson thinks it might be a little bit too extreme to favor liberty. And that becomes our philosophy. Yeah, we're for liberty, but come on now, we're not unreasonable. Sometimes you just got to crack some skulls. Is that the best libertarian nominee? They asked him about the world wars. Do you think it was justified for the United States to enter the world wars? And of course, I think he's trying to be careful not to give answers that the media will later hound him about. Now, if he were really knowledgeable and well-read, he wouldn't have any fear about this because he would say, bring it on, because I'll demolish you if you even try. But he's afraid, I think, because he's an intellectual lightweight. And this is a guy I've been friendly to and favorable toward for years. But enough is enough. His answer to that question was, I don't know. And his supporters cheered. They cheered in the audience. They cheered for I don't know as the answer. And what I got was, well, at least he didn't BS some answer. Again, where did our standards go? So we're excited because he could have made up an answer, but he didn't. So when he's asked about, only the two most momentous events of the entire 20th century and has no opinion, we should cheer because he might have lied. That's I think sometimes people get caught up with a cause they're supporting or a person they're supporting, and it gets to the point where it brings on a self-induced blindness. If anyone else were cheering for that, those same people would be laughing. But when it's their guy, well, they've got 27 excuses as to why that's acceptable. Then they asked, would you withdraw the United States from the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, and NATO? Okay, that's, most people are led to believe these are all wonderful things, so I'll grant you, that's a hard one. It's not difficult to know what the answer is, but it's hard in the sense that you're going up against 99% of the public. I mean, basically what we're fighting against is public schooling. That's the key thing. Public schooling is what we're fighting against. Because no one's even given the chance to hear what our position is, and then suddenly we have to throw cold water in their faces. I get that. But at least answer the question. You think about all the people who signed petitions and collected signatures and fought for ballot access and sacrificed their time and money for years and years and years just to get a nominee who can't answer a simple question. What is your answer? He gave no answer. You can watch the video for yourself. He gave no answer. He said, well, I think we need diplomacy. Well, yeah, well, so does everyone. What does that have to do with it? You can't have diplomacy without the United Nations. There was no diplomacy before the mid-1940s, really? How'd we get the Congress of Vienna then? How'd we get the relatively peaceful 19th century? We had no United Nations. How did that happen? So we get no answer, and we're told that we may have to engage with China over North Korea. Agreed. That is a good point. Nothing whatsoever to do with the United Nations. Couldn't you just, he's kind of proving my point. Couldn't you just call up China and deal with them? What do you need the intermediary of the United Nations for? Then he said nothing about NATO, which, for crying out loud, even some Republicans can stand up and say NATO has worn out its welcome. Its usefulness has expired now. We don't need it. All it does is cause trouble and stir up conflict. It is absolutely something that should be disbanded. The enemy it was created to fight does not exist anymore. That'd be your answer. Simple, straightforward answer. And then the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, Here's an opportunity to educate the public and say the International Monetary Fund is not a free market institution. We get blamed for everything it does because people call it a free market institution or a neoliberal, don't get me started on that term again, institution. No, we favor sound money and we favor international trade and that's it. We don't. What would we need an International Monetary Fund for? So why is that a hard question? Then how about this one? They asked him, Governor Johnson, 83% of law professors identify as Democrats. Can you think of any potential problems that might be caused as a result of that? So basically, now, okay, I understand Democrats, Republicans, you know, tomato, tomato. I understand, I get all that. But let's take Democrats as proxy for leftist, because in law schools, by and large, that is what that means. What's his answer to that? So here's a question that's really going to tell us, does he understand the nature of what we're facing here? Or does he just think, you know, the government is just too gosh darn big. We need to make the government smaller. Okay, that's a start. That's a start. But we're facing something far more sinister than that and far more systematic and serious. And he could not think of one answer to that question. Not one problem from people learning law, especially constitutional law, from leftists. No problem. And then he meandered onto some answer about how this will be an opportunity to try to reach out to these Democrats who are teaching in the law schools, because they're all going to go out and vote for Gary Johnson because he's so persuasive. This is just unbelievable to me. This is unbelievable to me. I mean, you've got social justice warrior stuff all over the place. You've got judges who have no sense of federalism, believe in centralization of power. The problems are limitless. Not to mention, you could easily imagine there being restrictions on free speech as SJW stuff begins to multiply. You could easily imagine that. And he can't see a thing. And then he said at one point in the debate, you know, both sides have some good points. You know, they have some good points, and these have some good points. And so we're going to try to take the... Are you kidding me? That's his view of the world? That the situation is that the two sides have some good points, but nobody's fusing them together? That's what we're facing? And here we are in an election in which populists on both sides are doing shockingly well. And instead, we're going to run somebody who is boringly conventional. I mean, he would put anybody to sleep, this guy. Boringly conventional. Libertarianism is described in the most boring way possible. Well, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Boring. Who is going to be brought on board by that? So let me say something about Tom Mullen. Now, Tom's a good friend. He's been on the show, and I like Tom. And in practical terms, I agree with him on basically everything. But he has a piece, I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/672, in which he says we ought to support Johnson for the following reasons. He said, now look, I agree. He's a lightweight. He is not impressive. He's not an effective communicator of the message. He stumbles all the time. He's unsound on important questions. I get all that. But maybe this could be the entry point for some people. But the thing is, I think that's an unfair contrast, because Harry Brown's an excellent entry point, even though he's quite radical. He simply knows how to speak to each audience, to bring them along. It's not like only the pragmatist, boring people know how to reach out to people. I know how to reach out to people. That's how I've converted a lot of people. I figure out where they are, and I talk to them. And yes, sometimes you say things to them that are challenging at first, but that's exactly what germinates in the mind. You can't quite get it out of your head. You think about it. Very rarely is somebody converted on the spot. You plant some seeds, and then you see where that goes. I've watched a lot of Johnson's speeches, and I just don't feel like seeds are being planted here. But Tom says that what will happen is people will join the party, and then once they get in the party, then they'll encounter real libertarians, and that will help to move them along further. But think about it. What kind of person is going to be attracted to a Libertarian Party that fields Johnson Weld? It's going to basically be wannabe Republicans, some pot smokers here and there. And so when people encounter those people, they're not going to learn libertarianism. They're not going to learn anything about non-aggression. They're not going to learn any of this, any more than Bill Weld has bothered to learn any of it. He was on TV not too long ago. I mean, with this year, talking about John Kasich, the candidate he endorsed. He endorsed John Kasich. How many libertarians do you know who did that? I mean, the guy Weld is basically a Rockefeller Republican. So he endorses John Kasich, and then he says, "I've always favored the universal health care mandate." Yeah, because that is what? What, that's consistent with the non-aggression principle? So I'm just a crazy stupid head for wanting to focus on what the party is supposed to believe in. I don't see that I'm the one with the problem here. And I don't think I'm the crazy or extreme one. And the funny thing is that before Weld was named as a vice presidential nominee, or as a candidate for vice president, I bet if I had talked to some of these people, they would have said, "Oh, he'd be terrible." But as soon as he's named, it's, "You're some kind of crazy weirdo for not jumping on board with this guy." So this is a guy who supported the Iraq War, and I'm supposed to believe, and then he supported Mitt Romney. So what? So, but then all of a sudden, he became a libertarian. This is why this ridiculous definition of fiscally conservative, socially liberal is just so utterly unhelpful. And incidentally, libertarians are not socially liberal. They don't have to be. I'm not socially liberal. Socially liberal means you basically, and by the way, this is what everybody who says it means by it. Means that we approve of all kinds of behaviors. No, that's not what a libertarian has to believe. A libertarian believes that you don't initiate physical force against peaceful people. But it doesn't believe that, it doesn't mean that I have to basically take the Gary Johnson position, which is that he can't see any reason why anybody would oppose any sort of personal behavior. Well, I don't care what his opinion is on that. There are reasons to support or not support certain behaviors, but that has nothing to do with libertarianism. The question is, should violence be used? So you got Bill Weld, Kasich supporter, Romney supporter, Iraq War supporter, Patriot Act supporter, universal mandate, the individual mandate supporter. And I'm supposed to believe that all of a sudden, though, now he's become a plumb line libertarian. And if I don't believe that, then there's something the matter with me. That's a problem. He's there to raise money. But raise money for what? To be a Me Too party? To put everybody to sleep with boring drones? Let me read what Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute had to say about the Libertarian Party convention. What I find very interesting is that the Libertarian Party Twitter page, their Twitter account, they tweeted Jeff's analysis. Very interesting. Somebody on the inside there agrees with what Jeff is saying. Jeff says, "At the Mises Institute, we don't support particular candidates for office or legislative policy proposals. We're primarily interested in ideas and education. And many of our most ardent supporters don't believe in voting or political activism at all, although no less than Walter Block does. But like Murray Rothbard, we of course maintain a rooting interest in seeing the most libertarian, i.e. least statist, candidates prevail. And I've recently argued for issue libertarianism over movement libertarianism in the face of a very tough political landscape for third parties. Rothbard, who helped Lou Rockwell create the Institute, was a Libertarian Party stalwart for many years, speaking at conventions, writing planks for the platform, suggesting tactics, and generally urging the party to move in a more hardcore direction. He loved the unruly nature of the LP and its infighting, just as he loved the intrigue and plot twists behind Republican and Democrat races, races he followed avidly and handicapped accurately. Lou himself was necessarily involved with the LP in 1988, helping Ron Paul secure the nomination after a surprising fight from the great, but not very libertarian, Lakota activist Russell Means. And many associates and fellow travelers of the Institute, like the anti-war writer Justin Raimondo, have been deeply involved with the LP over the years. This weekend's Libertarian Party National Convention showed many of the same schisms that have marked the LP throughout its roughly 40 years of existence. The question of whether to lead with right-flavored policies, low taxes, fiscal constraint, small government, or left-flavored policies, egalitarianism, drugs and victimless crimes, gay marriage, etc., once again revealed itself as the central tactical issue. The fundamental question, as always, was characterized as one of purity versus electability. Yet it remains a puzzle why principled libertarian populism, on issues where the public mood most closely matches the party platform, is so unthinkable. Winning soundbites don't have to be overtly intellectual, provided they are correct. Think end the Fed or get out of the Middle East. And by the way, the candidate should be taken to task for not making the Fed a more prominent campaign issue, given the deep unpopularity of central bankers among all voters. Former Governor Gary Johnson managed to win the nomination handily, despite coming into the convention with no momentum and facing a loud Never Johnson contingent. His curious choice of another former governor in William Weld, the distinctly illibertarian darling of Beltway Republicans in the 80s and 90s, now makes sense. The establishment wants their man to oversee things and temper the LP's excesses. But to overcome the two old white men obstacle, they will both need to work overtime to establish their social justice warrior bona fides. And Johnson himself doesn't seem very libertarian at all, either when speaking or in his stated policy beliefs. For example, gay cake baking, freedom of association, even Hiroshima. That is to say, Johnson was on television and he was asked about this, and instead of condemning it, he just went on and on about the wickedness of Japan. His Achilles heel will be the perception that he represents libertarian light, driving away many libertarian votes as a result. But he is unquestionably the choice of D.C. think tankdom, well, that's putting it mildly, and is rumored to be in line for Koch organization money. Whether Weld will be an asset or a liability, and whether leading with a milquetoast fair tax proposal is wise, remains to be seen. But from a purely activist perspective, Johnson Weld appears to represent the biggest opportunity to get votes. Winning 5 or 10% of the popular vote will not be easy. And we should not forget that Ross Perot received an astonishing 19% of the popular vote in 1992, and then U.S. voters returned quietly to their two-party cell block 4 years later. Austin Peterson, who appeared to be the beneficiary of the anti-Johnson momentum going into the convention, ended up receiving only about half the votes of the nominee. He was the most right-wing candidate, arguing against abortion and running far to the interventionist right on foreign policy. He also created controversy with his abrasive personality and personal attacks on some libertarian celebrities. Peterson's surprisingly poor showing demonstrates that any right wing of the LP has fully been defeated in favor of left SJW causes, where many in the party once advocated neutrality. There will be no Tea Party or ex-Cruz voters punching a Peterson-led LP ticket. John McAfee, the most interesting person in the race, ran what turned out to be a highly ephemeral campaign, featuring some beautiful campaign videos created by his running mate, Judd Weiss. He refreshingly admitted to not having read anything since college, and professed not to have heard of Mises and Rothbard. His focus on tech and cyber issues theoretically should have been attractive to millennials, but he failed to convince the old guard activists at the convention, who argued that the media opportunities in a Trump-Clinton year made it unwise to nominate a loose cannon with personal baggage. What none of the candidates did, however, was offer up a real alternative to government as we know it. This year presents a golden opportunity to make the case for a society that is not organized around politics or Washington, D.C., but around property, markets, and civil society. When LP candidates talk about equality and gay rights, conservatives simply dismiss them as liberals. When candidates talk about cutting taxes, liberals dismiss them as right-wingers. But a truly anti-DC, anti-war, and anti-Fed party, one that promotes decentralization and local control as the antidotes to culture wars, could make great strides in a shifting political world. First, the party of principle needs to decide if it wants to be SJW light and GOP light, or a serious choice for the millions of Americans who want to shrug off D.C. All right, finally, I want to share with you a Twitter exchange I had the other day with Jerome Tuccilli of Reason magazine. And it began because I saw a tweet from David Bowes of the Cato Institute. And, I mean, you guys, if you've listened to all these episodes, we're on episode 672. I generally don't spend my time talking about libertarians who drive me crazy. I generally don't. I got my thing, they have their thing, you know, we have a kind of an understanding. I could tell you some stories, but I choose not to. Anyway, David Bowes, and any candidate he's going to endorse is going to put you to sleep. Absolute guarantee. What's so funny is that people like me are, on the one hand, condemned as being stodgy conservative libertarians. We're not real libertarians like them. But then it turns out all the candidates I want to endorse are vastly more radical than anybody they want to endorse. They want to endorse the most sleep-inducing person. Whoever the most sleep-inducing person is, that's the one they want. That'll get the public riled up enough to vote for an unpopular third party for the first time in their lives. You think? It doesn't seem plausible to me. Anyway, Bowes had this tweet. This seems like kind of like a reach to me. But he had this tweet the other day saying, look at this, Bill Weld endorsed or had kind words for my book in 1997. So he's digging out a 19-year-old blurb and tweeting about it. Well, all right, I guess you can do that if you want to. So I wrote, referring to Weld, I wrote, and then he had some kind words for John Kasich, Beltway Libertarianism for the win. And then Tuchile jumped in and said, he, meaning Weld, favored the least crazy Republican before fleeing for the LP, the bastard. So obviously sarcasm, making fun of me. My response, I count four wars he was ready to launch. It's excusable to have kind words for that. And then I followed up, DC libertarianism, where supporting Kasich is a small matter to overlook. Now get me some pot. Then I said, where did Weld stand on Iraq? Let me guess, like Hillary, he's had a convenient change of heart. Surprise. Tuchile responds, we could keep it a pure club, but I'd be the only member. So again, it's that I'm insisting on this crazy standard of purity. So, remember, I'm supposed to be the terrible right-wing libertarian and all that. And yet, when push comes to shove, I'm the only one insisting. Even they have this feeling that I'm the one who's insisting on purity. Isn't that funny? Huh. Well, anyway, I responded that this has nothing to do with purity. I said, what an outrageous standard of purity I'm demanding, not supporting mass murder. But he's good on pot, so... Then the response, if you want to focus on pot, whatever floats your boat. I'm looking for better choices than Eva Perón and Mussolini. To which I responded, you're the pot people. You can overlook Iraq as a small matter, but gay marriage can't be compromised. Priorities. His response, I haven't mentioned the stuff. Don't think Weld is pure libertarian, but he's far more pro-freedom than competition. My response, he sided with evil idiots in slaughtering untold numbers, but hey, nobody's perfect. Response, you think he was riding a bomb down like Slim Pickens? I think he was mistaken, and he remains better than most. My response, you would be less forgiving on gay marriage than on mass murder. Very strange priorities. And then I responded again, so the rule is, if you advocate mass killing on laughable grounds and then say sorry, so-kay. His response, you're doing a lot of projecting, Tom. Would I be smoking pot while contemplating that? My response, to show that I'm not projecting, I can find plenty of pro-war people Cato is okay with. No gay marriage opponents. I must be imagining all this. His response, I think most of the country was wrong on that, meaning Iraq, but we don't have a big enough gulag for them all. My response, that's why they shouldn't get the nomination either. Support for that war shows inconceivably bad judgment. His response, if we were discussing leading a libertarian think tank, would agree, but politics is about trade-offs, different game. And now, my response, and I didn't get a real answer to this. What if he'd made insensitive racial remarks? Would he still be the best option? Or is insensitive speech worse than killing? Of course, I already know the answer. For the DC libertarians, insensitive speech is worse than killing. And that's true of left liberals, the New York Times. Insensitive speech is worse than killing because you'll never be heard from again after that. But you can support crazy wars for no good reason, and that's just a policy difference, and you'll be back. You won't be back because you'll never leave. So then somebody else jumped in and said, wouldn't Gary force the baker to make the cake? Kind of not personal liberty. And I responded, I agree with the guy. I said, but this matters to no DC libertarian. Freedom of association is embarrassing. Pass the hooch. Tuchile comes back and says, We all have our own acceptability limit for candidates. Doubt we could come up with a universal test. My response, fair enough. But your answer makes me suspect that, as with the left, insensitive language less forgivable than warmongering. Of course, remember, it's 140 characters. I have to leave words out. And then my final tweet, Wood's rule of life. Any candidate supported by DC think tankers is zzzz. And that's where we left it. All right, so there you have it. If you want to go support Gary Johnson because you think he's the best guy out there, knock yourself out. But at the same time, I don't think you should be intolerant toward people who think the Libertarian Party ought to be nominating people who are going to spread the libertarian message clearly, who are not going to be bending over backwards to appeal to leftists. Because apparently, I just read, the Johnson strategy against Trump is to call him out as a racist. Really? Call him out as a racist? That's what the Libertarian Party ticket is going to be up to? Look, Trump, issue after issue, drives me crazy. But this whole thing that he's a racist because what? Because he said one thing about some Mexican immigrants. He obviously did not say that about every single person coming to the United States from Mexico. I assume a libertarian knows that. A left liberal can't hear that. They hear any comment whatsoever, and they assume that the guy has generalized to the whole world. Trump never said anything that I would consider racist or a normal person would consider racist. Only a left-wing social justice warrior hysteric would think that anything Trump has said is racist. Even if he wants to restrict Muslims from entering the country, that is not, quote, racist. If you have disagreements with the guy, explain those disagreements. But don't use these left-wing, shut-down discussion, social justice warrior words. You know, the country is tired of it. Normal people are tired of it. I think we can do better. And let's hope in 2020 we do. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.